let's head to the hotline and bring in Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, a pleasure as always to have you on with us, and let's get right into Super Sunday. We are a week and a couple of days away, but earlier this week you put together your early Super Bowl odds market report, and you attacked this, I believe it was on Monday morning, talking about how initially there were some offshore sites that had the Chiefs laying 2.5 initially. That's obviously come down. How much more do you expect this to come down, and how much more change can we anticipate between now and next Sunday?
Well, there's still obviously a lot of time before the game, as you mentioned, and you know the vast majority of money for the side and total for the Super Bowl won't come in until probably about this time next Friday on into Saturday, and then, of course, plenty of it on game day. So we won't see a ton of movement in this line, either side or total, I don't think, until very late next week. I don't think this line is going to move a whole lot, to be completely honest with you, Andy. Right now you've got Kansas City anywhere from -1 to -1.5 out there. I don't think it moves very much. I think right now we've seen that that number is working pretty well. Anything higher than that, we see San Francisco money come in. Anything lower than that, it would probably go back up into the 1, 1.5 range. So I think this one's probably going to sit exactly where it is. And as a general rule here, when it comes to the Super Bowl, if people want to bet the favorite, they bet on the spread. If people want to bet the underdog, they bet the money line, which is right now San Francisco +105 or so to win the game outright. So we're probably going to continue to see exactly that. We'll see money on the San Francisco money line, money on Kansas City minus the points, and that should probably keep this line about where it is.
Well, what about the over here also? Because I've seen some numbers as low as 52, and there have been some as high as 55. This, like the line, is always going to fluctuate between now and Sunday too, but where do you see this trending before next Sunday?
What a lot of people are saying right now is that they expect this number to go up to 54.5, maybe as high as 55 out there. At that point, it's going to come down. You're talking about 54 and 55 are pretty important numbers when you talk about totals. You get a lot of games that kind of fall into that mid-50 range. So they are pretty important. And, of course, too, I mean, the game's in Miami. You know, it's South Florida. It doesn't matter if it's February or July or November. It rains every day down there for at least some period of time. So once we get a more concrete weather forecast, that could have a little bit of an impact on this total as well. I think eventually the sharp side winds up being the under, probably drags this back to 53.5, maybe 54, something like that. But that would be money that we see very, very late in the process because you know the public doesn't want to root for a game to go under the total. They want points. They want a high-scoring game. So we'll see a lot of public money on the over. I think when we get really close to kickoff, we'll see some of that influential buyback pull this number down a little bit.
And we're talking about a point maybe two. So it's not a major difference. And, you know, Kansas City isn't being looked at as a major favorite in this game. But what do you think it is that the odds makers see early on in the process here that made them favor Kansas City a little bit over the 49ers?
I think there are a few things. I mean, first of all, there's always going to be a slant towards the offensive team in the Super Bowl, you know, because this is one of the few NFL games over the course of the season where the public betting, the volume, can have a lot more of an impact on the line than the sharper side, the more influential money, because there's just so much public money out there. And a lot of people think that they're going to align with Kansas City because you've got the more exciting offense. You've got Patrick Mahomes, who is obviously much better than Jimmy Garoppolo. And it's a quarterback-driven league. We've seen that. There's been all the analytics talk over the last couple of weeks. The game inherently favors passing at this point in time. Even though San Francisco's rushing attack is very, very efficient, and their defense is obviously the better of the two here in this game, Kansas City was going to get preferential treatment from the volume bettors out there, the public bettors. So that's why they made Kansas City the small favorite here.
Well, prop bets are always a heck of a lot of fun to follow, especially when you get to the Super Bowl. There's all kinds of cool, crazy stuff out there as far as the length of the national anthem and many other things as well. Have you seen any interesting prop bets surface? I know we're still a little ways out, but have you seen any interesting prop bets out there to this point?
They are everywhere, Andy. I'll tell you what, it's kind of funny because out in Las Vegas, the Westgate Superbook last night released their prop catalog, 33 pages worth of props out there at the Westgate. Now, it's different in Nevada than it is in terms of the offshore markets, the online sportsbooks. The online sportsbooks have a little bit more flexibility to offer a lot of different things because they don't really have a governing body like a state gaming commission or anything like that. So in Nevada, it's all about game and player props. It's a lot of stuff that you can grade from a box score. Offshore, there are things like over under 92.5 commercials shown during the broadcast. George Kittle receiving yards against Xander Schauffele's final round score at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Super Bowl missed extra points versus hole-in-ones on number 16 at that Waste Management Phoenix Open next week. So there's a lot of cross-sport stuff that can go on. There's a lot of entertainment props based on the halftime show, Donald Trump's approval rating according to 538 compared to some of the player prop stats that are out there. There is a lot. And I will tell you this, you know, there's far more props nowadays than there used to be. And with this game here where you've got a Kansas City team that's very explosive on offense, very explosive at the skill positions in the passing game, do they have the football long enough for these player props to come in? Does Patrick Mahomes get his 30 or 35 pass attempts to get over 300 yards? Does he need that many? You know, does San Francisco play ball control? I think that this Super Bowl in particular, because you've got two teams with such contrasting styles, I think the prop betting market, in particular for the player props, is maybe the most difficult that I can remember in my 15 years of being part of this business.
You said Westgate has 33 pages of potential prop bets?
Yes, 33. It's a 33-page booklet that they have. And it's funny, too, because last night they opened up everything. I believe it was, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock Pacific time, something like that. And the people that were in line were only allowed to bet two props, and they'd have to go back and get in line again because those things move so quickly. It's a very inefficient market because the books are just kind of putting these things up based on, you know, kind of what they expect, kind of on a box score study, but it doesn't take too many limit size bets to move these. So that's why, you know, they were being very careful with their exposure. But it is astonishing the number of betting opportunities for this game.
Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Adam, we'll transition now over to some college basketball. There's some Horizon League action going on tonight. Seems like a contrast in pace will be in play tonight with Northern Kentucky taking on Wright State.
Yeah, and these are the two best teams in the Horizon League here, and really it's not all that close. Wright State, Northern Kentucky, and I looked at this game tonight, and I do kind of like Wright State a little bit. They are a four-point favorite here in this game. Northern Kentucky's head coach, John Brannan, from last year, took the job at Cincinnati. And Northern Kentucky was about average in pace last season. This year they have Darren Horn, who actually hadn't been a head coach since 2012, down with the South Carolina Gamecocks. And Northern Kentucky's playing at an extremely slow pace this season. Wright State playing at one of the quicker tempos in the Horizon League, and you know, they take great care of the basketball. They're very good on the offensive glass. I think that Wright State's in a pretty good spot here tonight, but this is a very important game because these are the two best teams in this league. It will be a one-bid conference in the NCAA tournament, so seeding is very important. Once we get to the conference tournament in early March and you get these tiebreakers in these head-to-head matchups. So I think with Northern Kentucky really slowing down, both of these teams playing very bad schedules to this point, I just think Wright State with, you know, their continuity and consistency year over year, probably in a better spot here tonight.
Taking a look at the rest of the weekend outside of the action tonight, Adam, what other college basketball games do you have your eye on Saturday and into Sunday as well?
There are several really interesting games here this weekend because, you know, we know about the Big Ten ACC Challenge with the non-conference games that are generally played, you know, in, I believe, November it is. Well, the SEC and the Big 12 challenges this weekend, and I think it's very strange that that pops up right in the middle of conference play. So you've got some teams that are going to want to win these games, want to have the opportunity to put something on their resumes from a seeding standpoint. So you've got Baylor and Florida. Baylor, the new number one team in the country. Florida was, in some people's minds, a number one caliber team coming into the season. They've kind of underachieved. I think that's a very difficult spot for Baylor leaving Big Ten play, heading out to Gainesville. LSU and Texas. One I really like is West Virginia hosts Missouri this weekend. I don't think Missouri is really going to prep too much for the very aggressive press defense of West Virginia. I think that could hurt them quite a bit in that game. So West Virginia is one of my favorite plays here this weekend. But one other game, a little bit of local flair here. Dayton's on the road at Richmond, and Dayton is a top five caliber team. They're one of the best offensive teams in the country. They are the best two-point shooting team in the country. But I think this is a very difficult game for them on Saturday against Richmond. I don't think people realize how good this Richmond team is. Dayton's had some close calls of late, in particular that very close game against St. Louis on the road last week. I think Richmond might trip Dayton up this weekend. Chris Mooney, a great head coach there for the Spiders. That's what I'm kind of looking at, where I think Richmond's in a very good spot.
All right, before we let you go, I wanted to throw this your direction, and I know that you guys definitely do dive into the daily fantasy leagues and things like that. And I know that used to be one of our consistent topics of conversation when we've had you on in the past, and don't know if you've had the opportunity to read about this story, but Darren Rovell had tweeted this out a little bit earlier today about a daily fantasy player who is suing Major League Baseball, DraftKings, and the Astros, all due in part to, you know, the Astros cheating scandal, because as this guy details, every lineup against those who used Astros batters or opposing pitchers was compromised, and this guy apparently is asking for millions. My question to you is there any substance to something like this? Because it feels like if one of these cases is won in any way, shape, or form, that just opens up a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I mean, there's such a slippery slope here. You know, and look, I mean, hey, you might as well try it and see what happens. You might as well try to put that lawsuit out there and see if you can kind of find something. And in particular, too, it's kind of interesting because, you know, DraftKings has a close relationship with Major League Baseball now, and in fact had deals in place with the Astros and the Red Sox. And, you know, I remember the first Indians game I went to, and there was an ad, I believe it was for FanDuel, on the tarp, on the, you know, the canvas that covers up the tarp. So I was kind of taken aback by that. But I don't think that this is going to go anywhere. I would be surprised if it does, just because, you know, it is such a slippery slope that all of a sudden, if this guy wins something, then what? You know, more people filing suits, probably a class action lawsuit comes together, something like that. I would be very surprised. But, you know, hey, I mean, if you might as well go ahead and give it a shot and see what happens.
Sure, shoot your shot, right? That's what
exactly
they say. So it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of this. But, you know, Matt Douglas and I were talking about this earlier today. I mean, let's just say something comes of this. I mean, how much at fault is DraftKings in this scenario? I mean, unless somebody within DraftKings knew what the Astros were doing, how much at fault could they possibly be in this scenario?
Probably not much. And also, too, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you have to try and quantify what the impact actually was of sign stealing. And I think that's going to be something that's very, very difficult to prove, because, you know, people point to the Astros playoff numbers or individual playoff numbers, but a lot of their hitters were better on the road than they were at home during that 2017 season. And we know that this has been going on for a long time, but you would have to find a way to quantify exactly how much impact this actually had, not just relative to the lineups and the contests that you played, but just in general. I mean, you'd have to at least start with some kind of baseline and then determine how much impact it, you know, it actually had. And I don't think you can really do that. I mean, you know what's coming, but you still have to barrel it up. You still have to square it up. So I don't know. But I will say this. What I'm most interested in finding out here going forward is how many other teams were doing something and how much more of it comes to light. Because I would be stunned if out of the 30 Major League Baseball teams, there were only two or three that were actually doing this.
Sure. And I guess we'll find out here in due time. Although, knowing the way today's news cycle works, and as defensive as you'd expect the Astros to be at this point, somebody else would have certainly come forward at this point, wouldn't they? If other teams were actually doing it, you know, we're a week and a half removed from the initial ruling from the commissioner. And I'm not saying that nobody else was doing this, but boy, oh boy, I mean, right now the only three teams that are kind of connected in all this, at least that we know about, are the Astros, the Red Sox, and the Mets to a very small degree, because their manager was the only player who was implicated in that 11-page report. But I don't know. I look at that and I hear everything you're saying. I only think that, boy, in today's news cycle, wouldn't we know about that by now? Wouldn't somebody have come out and said something or pointed the finger at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a possibility. And you know what Houston did? I mean, they kind of rolled it up and hung it around anybody's neck that wasn't with the organization anymore. They tried to deflect as much blame as they could. ultimately they did, you know, get rid of Luhnow and Hinch, largely because Major League Baseball kind of forced them to. But as you read that report, I mean, man, did they hang Alex Cora out to dry in that thing. And, you know, I mean, look, I think it's one of those things, too, where do we really want to know about it? You know, you get college football and even college basketball, for example, we know recruits are getting paid off. You know, the only time it becomes stupid is when you get yourself caught. And the Astros and the Red Sox got themselves caught here because Mike Fiers came out and, you know, started this investigation. There was some good journalism. But, you know, I mean, like I said, we know that recruits are getting paid around the country. We just either turn a blind eye or keep our heads in the sand or whatever else, you know, until somebody gets caught. And then it becomes a big story or grades get fudged or something like that. So, you know, maybe it's just one of those things where this is kind of the tip of the iceberg, but we don't see the rest of the iceberg.
Yeah, very, very good point. Adam, great stuff as always. Always enjoy having you on. Make sure you check out bangthebook.com and listen to Adam's daily radio shows as well at Bang the Book Radio. Adam, have a great weekend. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Take care, gentlemen.
Thank you, Adam. Again, that's Adam Burke with bangthebook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Some really, really good stuff in there and some interesting insight on the Astros and that cheating scandal. And, you know, certainly the door is still open a little bit, as Adam mentioned, for Major League